your host for Lacrosse Talk PM, Rick Solem.
All right, welcome to a Monday of Lacrosse Talk PM. I am Rick Solem. In the studio with me this hour, Lacrosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds, who was just telling me about the not quite robot battle at the Lacrosse Center. Do those work?
No, I don't know. I don't need those. Somebody might call. It was definitely robots. Yeah, the robotics. It was the first robotics competition. FIRST is the, I can't think what the, it's an acronym for something. But down at the Lacrosse Center this past weekend, it was just, it was ridiculous. It was so cool.
These like young people or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Old people. Young people. And then there was the Nerds on a Mission group from Holman that was down there that got some funding from Lacrosse Community Foundation, by the way, to do some of their work. But that was a fantastic, they were incredible. They're from Holman, and it's a group of kids. I don't even know how old they are, but they're middle schoolish, something like that. They're doing the FIRST, FIRST is again the acronym, you can look it up. FIRST Lego League robotics competition. They're going to the world competition down in Houston in a couple of weeks. So very excited for them. I got to meet them and hear their story and hear them talk about this potato bioplastic kazoo that they designed and built. That just it was just amazing when you think about it, you know, I mean. It was funny because I ran into Dan Kapanke down there, and we were talking about like if we had robotics in when we were kids in school, like our lives would have turned out completely differently, because having that as a educational model.
I think you did. You just didn't.
Nope.
You,
no, we didn't.
Did something else.
Nope. I'm older than you are, Rick.
You
we didn't. Played, we didn't
you
have
Legos.
There was not Legos. Robotics. No, there were no robotics. We had like you know we had circular saws and lathes.
Oh,
but there were no robots.
Well, you're talking that's tech ed.
Yeah, right? I mean, yeah, we didn't have
different
robots.
Kind of tech.
Yeah, we didn't have. We have, we had what radio? We had trash 80s for computers.
The saws plugged in though.
They were actually electricity. We had electricity. Yeah, so there was electricity back in the day. Believe it or not, but yeah, it was thrilling and it was fun to watch the competitions and just see all the people that were into it and just really fun.
Little jealous.
I'm a little jealous. I had loved to have when I was a kid build robots and compete in a giant arena. That would have been really fun for sure.
Wouldn't be sitting here. That's for sure.
I wouldn't be sitting here.
Actually, you know, maybe you would. 608-785-7914 is the talk and text line. All right, so we get that. I wanted to just do some positivity.
Right. Before yeah, no, there's a, yeah, let's like deep dive on
it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that, all negative. You know, it's all growth.
No, the rest of the show.
It's all
just
growth.
Negative.
No, it'll all be growth. It'll be growth potential is what it's all going to be.
We don't want sidewalks.
Feeling very positive.
Negative campaigning.
Extremely.
Elections.
Extremely positive about that.
Nothing's going up in River Point. There's nothing.
Very excited. Very, very positive about that.
There's been no talk of having a city administrator so we can curtail some of your powers.
Oh, very excited about all that positive talk.
Cleaned up 180 tons of garbage on the riverbank.
Lots of positivity there.
And something about a city council supermajority vote.
Oh, sure. Yes.
I have to just explain it. I'm just going to go.
Strong.
Supermajority, go.
Strong amounts of positivity there.
Okay. All right. So that's the rundown of what we're going to talk about. If you got anything else for me. Shoot me a text, 608-785-7914. Oh, this one's buried. And, the Wagon Wheel Trail.
Sure.
That could be positive.
Oh, that's incredible. Are you kidding?
And, yeah, okay. So, yeah, that's it. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with Lacrosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. All right, welcome back to Lacrosse Talk PM. I'm Rick Solem. In the studio with me this hour, Lacrosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. We're going over the break the how women's sports is growing, I guess, and will it continue to grow the way it is, or will it just follow Caitlin Clark and we'll see this following go from college basketball to the WNBA?
I think awareness of women's sports is a different than women's sports, because women's sports has been growing for a really long time, but the awareness and just the commercial viability of women's sports, I think, is following the numbers. And Caitlin Clark has showed that you can create, you know, that there is that there's a tremendous amount of viability in women's sports, and it really needs sponsors and others to step up and realize that that market is there. And that realization simply has not been there for a really long time. And now, you know, now I think that Clark has shown, others have done this before, but Clark has shown without doubt that there's a tremendous viability and marketability of female athletes. And that's great, because, I mean, you know, we talk about the NBA, when you're having a starting salary of what is it, $76,000 for a first round pick for the WNBA, that is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, and it's, I think it's a failure of marketing and a lack of understanding of just how marketable that sport is. I mean, it's exciting, and there are a tremendous number of WNBA players that shoot over 40% from three. And I think that, you know, that's actually that kind of, when you spread the game like that, it makes it really exciting. And I think it's a great sport to watch.
All middle school, high school girls basketball coaches in the area, well, just in general, are just
sure,
like pulling their hair out because all their kids are shooting logo three-pointers now.
Well, that's what happened with Steph Curry, though. When Steph Curry stepped up, suddenly, 10-year-old boys were jacking threes from 29 feet. I mean, that's the ultimate thing.
Didn't let me shoot threes in high school. It's like, I wouldn't have either. On the block. Yeah. But then I played in like the junior reserve games because I broke my leg senior year, went to junior reserve.
I felt like we were going to talk about sidewalks or something.
We're going to talk about sidewalks, fine. But this is more cultural.
Okay. Right. Fair enough.
On the flip side, what we forget is the women's college volleyball season was extraordinary.
Okay.
And the Badgers have a home spring game, April 19th.
Okay. Sold out. Good.
Sold out already.
Yep. So, spring game. Nice.
Yeah. Good. So that's volleyball.
All right. All right. Got through that.
Do you want to do
whatever you'd
super
like.
Majority talk? I just don't know what's going to take longer, or sidewalk, because sidewalk is like sidewalks literally, and wagon wheel trail sidewalks, I think. Super majority is something I don't understand, so you're just going to have to explain it.
Well, let me just say, the wagon wheel trail project is something that is going to be great to connect the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin via a bike trail. I mean, it's been in the works for a really, really long time. We are trying to get the funds necessary to make the adjustments so that we can make that last connection between lacrosse and La Crescent. That's basically what it comes down to. So we're hopeful that we can get some federal grants to get that completed. We do believe that that is a strong possibility. We're very excited about the possibility of funding that and then getting, and you know, this is largely, I mean, the vast majority of what's involved here is federal money to complete the wagon wheel trail. Very excited about that. And that will be a significant link between the two states for a bike trail across the Mississippi River.
There's going to be a bike bridge. Will it be very separate or kind of connected to one of the blue bridges?
Well, the blue bridges feed that connection. So everything empties out into the blue bridges area. So we have bike infrastructure that basically gets to everything until you get to the West Channel, and then everything stops. Mm-hmm. So we have to get past the West Channel.
Okay. How much funding are we talking about? And is it just like...
I mean, millions of dollars.
Yeah.
It's millions and millions of dollars. We're talking about a bridge across this channel of the Mississippi River.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
It's a lot of money.
I remember talking to Robbie Young.
Robbie Young, yeah, sure.
Well,
he's a key member of our Bicycle Pedestrian Advisory Committee.
And we were talking about the I-90 bridge. Already has like a thing built on it, where you could put a bike bridge on the I-90 bridge. You
right,
just have to
right,
put it on
right,
there.
Right. Like yep.
Legos, right?
Yep.
But the blue bridges downtown don't have that, right? So you have to build a separate bridge.
I think the DOT also doesn't want to. There's some problems with the DOT adding that like bridge connection to the interstate bridge.
So. Okay, so it'll be a totally separate bridge.
Right, yeah,
okay.
A separate bridge. Yeah.
Just making sure. Is it easier to talk about that stuff? Because anytime bicycles, bike lanes, we don't need more bike. Like, it gets contentious, but if you call it the wagon wheel trail, then it's cool and nobody gets mad about it because it's wagon wheel trail.
It's cool. It's already the wagon wheel trail.
Right.
So we're just connecting the wagon wheel trail.
But if it didn't have that name and we said we're going to create more bicycle lanes, people would be mad. It's going to be millions of dollars for bike lanes.
Yep. That happens every single time. No question.
Not this time, because you called it the wagon wheel trail. You don't understand what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. Okay.
City Council is going to vote on in kind of implementing a plan. I think the legislature and the governor signed into law. Mm-hmm. You got till the end of the year, I believe, to create this thing where the council won't need a supermajority to overturn. I guess am I on?
Man, right you track? Are so close.
I'm so
yeah,
close.
So right.
I'm off the trail now.
So. Yeah, so we can no longer require a supermajority to enact a zoning change if there's a 20%. If we reach that 20% legal objector level. So if you have a 20% legal objector level, if you will require a 3/4 majority of the governing body to enact a zoning change.
So for example, the YWCA yes. wanted to expand to last month.
Correct.
And there was a bunch of legal objector yes. letters yep. to the council.
Yep.
What is a legal objector? Like what, as opposed to just I oppose
it's,
this
yeah,
letter?
It's based on proximity. People who live a proximal distance from the area, and it's not based on the number. It's based on the square footage of whatever it is. So it can be you could have one property that could if you have enough footage of that property, you might reach that 20%. Level of legal objector to trigger that supermajority. So we're the city that legislation is moving forward to coincide with what the state has already enacted. There was an amendment to just put it in place when the state requires us to on January 1. I don't think anybody is opposed to that, so that'll probably just happen.
All right. So if this happened a month and a half ago,
right.
the YWCA probably would have had their expansion plan enacted.
Probably, yeah.
Can it go back to the council? Will it go back to the council? Or do you read those letters and go, oh, you know what? There is an issue here with what's going on. I mean, if you read some of those legal objector letters.
An issue with what? What do you mean?
Well, with the YWCA legislation. I mean,
right.
I just, like, you read those letters and do you just ignore them or...
No, we read all the letters.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we don't ignore. I don't think, I mean, I don't.
I mean,
I don't
ignore is a bad word, but, yeah. like, you're just going to overturn... those illegal objections without addressing what they're saying, you know?
I think that all those concerns were addressed. Yeah, I don't think it happens. I think that I the city council, I feel, take their roles very seriously and consider the impacts of their decisions with the concerns of everyone who writes a letter, who doesn't write a letter.
Right? Do you like the law that's enacted here that kind of gets rid of the supermajority you need?
Well, I think that it's reasonable. I don't think it's unreasonable. I don't think it's I don't know if the supermajority is necessary. I do think that there is a danger of a tyranny of a minority that can happen when we have laws where we require a supermajority for certain things. I think that when you have a city council that is an at-large city council. It's a little bit different than when you have a council that is a district-based city council. I think with ours, we have district-based aldermen, and they make decisions that are typically not only for the benefit of the people in their districts, but those in the rest of the city as well. And so it feels like their votes are more representative than it might be otherwise. And so I don't feel like a majority is. I feel like a majority is reasonable for zoning decisions for the most part.
Yeah, if we get into the, like, I don't know, supermajority versus the U.S. Senate always needs like a 60 out of a 60.
Two-thirds, yeah. Two-thirds, yeah.
Two-thirds or 60. It's 60
yeah.
votes, I think.
Yeah, it's yeah, something like that. Yeah.
And
60-40, yeah, you're right.
Nothing gets done. It's a filibuster vote, you know. Like, so,
generally speaking, yeah.
So, you know, I just see that kind of a good thing because, but I've never, I mean, how many times has this come up, the legal objection where, you know, it kind of smushes some agenda item and you need to...
Gosh, I haven't seen that.
This is the first time, probably in a while, I guess.
I don't remember another one off the top of my head.
So it's rare. So it's kind of like...
Boy,
would the
LaCrosse
Center expansion have been anything like that?
No, because there was already... No, the LaCrosse Center expansion, it was that we're not making a zoning change at that point.
Okay.
Yeah, this is like if you're And that was the YWCA request, was to make a zoning change, and so that's where So if you're going from residential to commercial, or in this particular case, it was R1 to traditional neighborhood. So making that zoning change, if there is that, if you reach that 20% legal objector level, then that's where it triggers a supermajority.
Zoning changes in general, is there a better way to do this? More efficient or easier when it comes to just...
Well, that's actually a great question, because right now, on the heels of adopting our comprehensive plan for the city of La Crosse, which took a significant amount of time, I think it was 18 months or 19 months or something like that, but it was a big deal, it was a heavy lift. On the heels of that, we're going to be, in fact, this is on the council agenda this week as well, is collating funding so that we can work on our zoning changes to our zoning code. And that really will change how... It really is adjusting our zoning code to fit our comprehensive plan. And so ideally there would be less of a need to make these zoning changes, because all of the zoning would already fit within the comprehensive plan in the city of La Crosse. So, the type of zoning that we have might change as well. I don't want to get too far in the weeds here because it gets a little boring, but I think that once we do that, we're going to have a significantly fewer number of requests for zoning changes, because it will all coincide with our comprehensive plan. So I feel pretty positive about that.
Is there an example that you could
use? Oh my gosh, Rick.
That would be in the weeds. That would just be like, here's an example. We're going to go to break.
And yeah, okay.
Think maybe you could think of an example. If not, we'll just ignore it and move on.
We just, okay.
All right, we'll be back. All right, welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM. I'm Rick Solom. In the studio with me, La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. We're going to talk about, we were talking about supermajority stuff. You were looking something up, but you didn't, you couldn't find it in the weeds. We were getting very much in the weeds.
We were, yeah, yeah, we were.
I did find out, and now I probably closed, I definitely closed the page, but I did find out what first robots means, or first...
Mm-hmm.
And now I close the page, so I don't remember. But Dan is calling in, and I think he wants to talk a little. Maybe it's a zinger. Dan, do you just got a zinger for the mayor here, or what?
Yeah, just a couple of little comments on what you've been talking about. You were talking about how interesting robots would have been in school if you'd have been open to that. And when I was in grade school in the 70s, they took us to a clinic on dairy farming and everything. And outside of the area where they were showing the exhibits, they had this little injection mold thing with the two aluminum block molds pressing together, and out would come a little cow injection plastic molded thing. And I heard one of the employees say, the students are more interested in this mold machine than they are in the dairy process. That was quite comical. And that was our form of 3D printer for the day back then. But the other thing I wanted to come out on was women's sports. They were looking for a name for the women's softball team, and I thought between the two bluffs, I was thinking of the name Thunderclap. They had the Thunder Stock races in West End, Thunderclap, and every time they get to base, they could play some sound effect, do a little Thunderclap dance or something, make it interesting and fun.
I think it's a great idea. It's funny. I appreciate that. It was great. I was just thinking about that injection molding thing. My father worked in the plastics molding industry for many, many years, and I spent time just like hanging around with like toxic plastic beads. but it is fascinating, the injection molding process, when you like squirt some hot plastic into a mold and it comes out like some toy. But anyway,
couple Fridays ago, sure, guys.
Man, we totally got to make this more interesting. Really coming up here as soon as possible.
Couple Fridays ago, okay. UW La Crosse political scientist and I. Trigoski and I talked about the lacrosse steam. So the lager's equivalent to softball is the lacrosse steam.
Okay.
So not the Thunderclap. They already have a name.
Okay.
But we need a celebrity to have, like the Jack Nicholson Lakers celebrity. We need, because they were, they have season tickets.
Yeah.
Who could sit every game up front as the lacrosse celebrity? That would be, this is the person. They're at the game today. And they always get this seat. Is there such a thing? Can that happen in a town this small?
I don't know who that would be.
Be you.
No, goodness knows. I mean, there's a lot of folks that might fit that mold. I mean, typically they've been, they've been television personalities and things like that.
They kind of stem from the Milwaukee Journal did the most popular person from each county or something.
Sure.
And it was some cook on the Food Channel that was okay. lacrosse, and huh. I don't remember who it was anymore. And clearly not popular enough if she sat in the front row at the Steam games. Wouldn't bring in more people to come. Oh, she's going to be at the game. Like, oh, she's always at the game. It didn't work. So, yeah. Back to sidewalks. Why doesn't a southern neighborhood by Hinchin School want sidewalks in their front yard? Because they don't want to. They want the trees to stay.
Well, we had heard a number of different reasons for why they don't want sidewalks, and I think that it guess really just depends on the person that you talk to. So I guess I can't answer for them. I can tell you that sidewalks have been part of making sure that we're connecting sidewalks within the city of La Crosse and any number of different neighborhoods, not just that neighborhood, but any neighborhood that has come into the city in recent decades that has been annexed but has never been provided sidewalks or providing sidewalks for those areas that for some reason never had them. That has been a goal of the city for a really long time and really has only increased We've only increased our certainty that we're going to achieve that because of the need to make sure there are accessible transportation. There's accessible transportation infrastructure for everybody here in the city of La Crosse, and so sidewalks are part of that. Are part of that model. I mean, it's also part of our green complete streets plan. It's part of the Safe Routes to School plan. It's part of our comprehensive plan. Our climate action plan to ensure that we are facilitating a move towards alternate transportation, alternative to vehicle transportation. And so I think that there's just not a way that the city can move forward in a way that provides more equitable transportation for everybody unless we have walkable neighborhoods and areas where not only people can drive around, but walk around and their kids can bike around on sidewalks.
Are we doing sidewalks? Can we do sidewalks differently? Like, can we? Like, okay, so where I'm from, my parents, the city of Greenville, or
sure.
It's not a city or whatever, but they're gonna put sidewalks on both sides of the road.
Yeah.
Of this like 45 mile per hour road, and I'm just like, can you just put it on one side of the road and then maybe double the size? And therefore, you're saving some money, but you also still have the sidewalk. It's also
what is the goal here? Is the goal to save money? Is the goal to save space? What is the actual goal here? What are you trying to achieve?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think you could save money. I think the sidewalk would be more usable if it was a little bit wider. I'm getting at is we got this bike track.
We have sidewalks that our standard for sidewalks is such that we can have. You know, two people that have mobility challenges that can cross each other going opposite directions. So people in chairs can cross each other going opposite directions. That's our standard for sidewalks. So we already have that. And we want to put that in on all blocks. So anybody with a disability challenge can move around the city and do it in a way that it's not limiting. Now, and, you know, part of the reason that we have worked so hard to ensure that people shovel the sidewalk ramps and shovel their sidewalks in the wintertime is that not everybody is able to easily walk around. Not everybody is able to easily, or not everybody drives in this city. So we want to make sure there's mobility access for everyone. And that's true with sidewalks as well. Once you eliminate sidewalks in a neighborhood, you're basically telling people with disabilities you can't go there. If you have a walk, if you have a mobility disability, that means you can't go in that neighborhood because that means you're going to walk out in traffic. Now, if we want to entertain the idea of re-engineering how we look at sidewalks or reimagining how we look at sidewalks, I'm all into that. If you want to say, all right, instead of having a city, a roadway and a terrace and then a sidewalk, instead of saying that, we're saying we have a roadway, sidewalk, then a continual right-of-way space into a city and into a private yard, that's fine. But we're not going to eliminate a separated walking space because people want to maintain a city property as if it's their own yard, which is what is happening in multiple neighborhoods. People have gotten used to this idea of a city right-of-way, which is publicly owned by all the taxpayers, as if it's their own yard. So do we want that to be the legacy of our city, or do we want to say we're using that right-of-way to ensure mobility access for everyone? And personally, I think that I'm going to fall along the lines of making sure that we're ensuring mobility access for everyone and not saying that, yeah, you can just use that public property as your own because it's connected to your yard. I'm not in favor of that.
But what I was getting at, yes, we should maybe rethink how we do sidewalks. Like, is it a curb and then a separate area?
Right.
Or more like the bike track out here. It's not like I'm deep diving into this stuff, but the bike track's pretty cool, except when cars drive down it because they don't understand when you turn right, you got to go around the bike track. You haven't put in my idea with the flappy signs.
No, I like the idea, though. I like the idea. Yeah.
Like, it just seems like it's so much easier because it's just the road. It's probably easier to plow as opposed to then homeowners don't have to shovel.
We had no complaints from the snowplow drivers. To my understanding, I just asked about this today. Did we have any complaints from the snowplow driver? We just had, you know, the couple snowfalls, as you know.
Right.
But once we did plow that, the plow drivers, you know, they had to get used to it, but they did not have a concern with it.
Yeah, it's just one of the things like, okay, like let's do something massive and then it'll just be easier and safer, and probably just the wider the sidewalk, I think the better it is to use.
Well, so. to an extent, yeah. I mean, we're not going to get beyond. You know, I think our normal width in La Crosse, and this is not everywhere, folks. We're out to 6 feet, and we make exceptions for 5 feet in some circumstances, but generally we're out to 6 feet
because
we want to make sure that there is equitable access for everybody who wants to use a sidewalk so people can just get around. And I think that is what marks an equitable society, an equitable community, is ensuring that everybody has access, that everybody can move around. It's just not the folks who can, you know, that can easily, like the folks who don't want sidewalks, just like, well, I got a car, I can just easily go jump out of my car in my driveway and drive wherever I want. I want to make also sure that we got the folks with walkers and the folks who are in chairs and honestly, the families with little kids who want to ride their bikes not in the middle of traffic, but on a sidewalk where they can learn to be safe and they can learn how to ride and then later get out in the streets where bicycles belong. I think that it's necessary for us to do that, for us to be a just and equitable society.
I don't think we need a bike track like we have on 2nd Street in front of the La Crosse Center everywhere, but that would be cool to expand quite, you know, throughout the city. I think that's kind of what the wagon wheel trail is ideal.
We are absolutely, definitely working towards expanding our bike network throughout the city of La Crosse. You know, we have, for years, as long as I've lived in La Crosse, there's been complaints about the lack of bikeability within the downtown. So the 2nd Street bike track, for those of you who have seen it, it certainly is. It's been a massive change, and people are definitely like Rick was just saying, people not people driving down the bike track because they don't understand, they don't get it, and I completely understand. Honestly, I think that there are different ways to design those areas that work better in different places. I have been on the record, the Cass Street changes from many years ago when they made the bump outs and the bike track, then the bike lanes that didn't go anywhere. I'm definitely on record as saying that was a bad design, and I wish we would have done it differently, and I would certainly do it differently now. I'm looking for ways to change that. It's not, you know, it doesn't rise to the highest on the priority list, but as we add new bike infrastructure in downtown La Crosse, which we absolutely are going to do, it will make things a lot better for people who want to get around on two wheels.
All right, I want to talk about the homeless cleanup, the encampment cleanup when we come back.
All right.
All right, welcome back to La Crosse Talk PM. I'm Rick Solom. In the studio with me, La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. All right, a couple of weeks ago, you wrote something on the website. We put it on our website as well. The city cleaned up the encampments or the embankments of the Black River. I don't know if you did the Mississippi Rivers too as well, but 180 tons this year were cleaned up from those embankments, including 130 tons over a two-day period last month.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like hard to imagine, like how much that is.
It's a lot, yeah.
But part of what you said there were enforcement actions from the Wisconsin DNR against the city of La Crosse. Was the city like fined for something, or what were these enforcement actions the DNR took against the city?
Yeah. So, and this is not related to that space. It was related to a space south on the southern tip of Isle of Plume. And it was from a cleanup that we did in December. So there were folks that had camped out down there and, you know, acquired a bunch of stuff as they do. And we had to get down there and clean it out. We had to basically build a road because it's basically south of the municipal service center or where the brush dump is, that area right there. So they, I think, cut through a fence and gotten down there, and it was a massive, massive undertaking. And I think we'd spend a couple days, 2-3 days down there, and it was in December. So there was actually a time when there was snow on the ground. We went down there, cleaned it out. We had to like basically build a road down there to get down there to pull machinery, to pull the stuff out. I don't remember how many tons of stuff that we took out of there, but the DNR had received a complaint about the things that were down there. The warden, one of the wardens, went down there and took a look, and then didn't contact us, but shot it up the food chain, and they had suggested that we were burying garbage on the south end of Isle of Plume in the wetlands, which was absolutely ridiculous, but... And then we had this long conversation with the DNR. Everybody got together on a call, and they sent us a letter of noncompliance after we'd actually already cleaned it up, because it was really what was left. We had because it was December, there was snow covered. There was actually still some garbage down there, mm-hmm. So we had to go back to do some hand picking and things like that, and then seed it and all sorts of stuff. So, there was like a $5,000 a day fine that we were facing for noncompliance. So it was from their part a typical overreaction, but it was something that we knew was an actual concern about how the DNR was looking at how folks who are living unsheltered were impacting the environment. And so, you know, some of our decisions were certainly based on what we would be facing as an enforcement action by the DNR.
So that probably led to the rest of the cleanup eventually?
That was a part of it. It was certainly not all of it. One of the biggest thing that happened was back in January, we started looking at where people were settling, what that looked like, and then what April meant for those people. Because generally speaking, every single April, especially last year, but every single April, the area where people were settling north of Riverside Park, that goes underwater, generally speaking, every April. Last year it was significant, right, because it was the third highest flood on record. So what we did is we started planning for how we can make sure that things are cleaned up there, and make sure that people are out of there before the floods come, so that we would have to send people in to rescue them, because they don't generally move willingly. And so we wanted to make sure that we're not putting people at risk, them at risk, or our emergency responders at risk in terms of rescuing people in high water. So we put plans in place where we could vacate that area, clean it up, potentially create an emergency shelter space, which we could not, you know, we just couldn't come up with one. Not sufficient enough to deal with the numbers that we were talking about. And then planned on, you know, March 18th is the time we were going to clean up, because we figured we would need that amount of time. If waters came early in late of March, then we would need that amount of time to, you know, pick up that area. As it turns out, we have had one of the lowest water years on record.
Yeah.
And so I think we'll still see some flooding there in maybe a couple of weeks, but the high levels of water that we're anticipating is like 10.3 feet. It floods at 8.5.
Yeah. So a safety issue. And then on top of that, like also if it floods, all that stuff goes into the river.
Yeah. Well, safety, the environmental hazard, potential environmental hazard, all that, the 180 tons that we're talking about. And this was, we picked this up over several weeks. It was 130 tons for the last couple of days. But the potential environmental hazard of having all this plastic and all these propane tanks and everything float down the river. But also it's honestly, after a period of time, when you get people in a concentrated encampment area without proper facilities, it things that health hazards there are significant. And we try to mitigate that to the extent that we can. So,
and we're still to the point here where if they leave, there's still no place for them to go.
No.
Shelter-wise.
There is nothing.
We just don't have the capacity.
We have one shelter. The Salvation Army is the shelter. It is at capacity right now.
All right. And that's the whole Pathways Home project, is trying to
absolutely
alleviate that.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there any, like, you know, are we going in that direction solidly?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, the implementation is underway. There's work, steady work going on to make sure that we are fulfilling the promise of Pathways Home. We are, you know, putting our list together to make sure that we're connecting people with appropriate housing for them. We have to identify the housing. There's a lot of work that goes into this, but our intention is to make sure. And again, the work is ongoing every single day. And we are working towards a future where not only do we connect people with housing to make sure that there is no, you know, there's no homelessness really functional. We're at a functional zero of homelessness, but also we're ending encampments. That's not going to be a thing anymore in the city of La Crosse. We have to get there. It's going to take a minute, but that is absolutely part of the Pathways Home plan. So whatever's happening in right now, there's people that are setting up in the marsh in certain areas, people setting up at the Black River a little ways. There's folks in Onalaska and Shelby and all kinds of stuff. But our goal is to ensure that there, because it's not any way for people to live. You can't live like that here. It's just not acceptable. But we don't have places for people to go yet. Once we do, we're not going to allow encampments here.
All right. That's La Crosse Mayor Mitch Reynolds. I wanted to ask about city administrator, but we're going to run out of time.
It's coming.
How does that look? You got 30 seconds. Is it just preview?
We're working on the plans right now. We're trying to figure out how this works into not only the city budget, but how we can make this work with the current city government, the state of city government. Very excited about the possibility. Really think it's necessary to make sure that the city of La Crosse is a modern and grown-up city in the future.
All right. Thanks, Mitch.